We're back for part two of our episode, The Dangerous Lives of Black Children. I'm Hannah Stanley, the host of On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. Please again take a quick moment and hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our content. With me currently is Nataka Moore, a professor of psychology at Adler University with expertise in the effects of violence and racial discrimination against Black children. Nataka, thank you so much for coming in and joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Racism is, of course, a gigantic topic and one that is in the news far more than it has been in decades past. Well, that's not necessarily true either. It's pretty consistently in the news. So where at this point, when this has been consistent for so long in ebbs and flows, where do we start with this topic?
Okay, so absolutely. Racism is, so I want to first start by saying that racism is multifaceted and its impact on Black children and their well-being is also multifaceted. So, you know, I wish I can speak to all the ways in which it impacts children's, Black children's well-being, but I do want to start with sense of belonging, a psychological sense of belonging. And so what that is, so Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about the different things that people need to be their best selves, to feel healthy, to feel good about life. And the first stage is obviously physiological needs. So you need food, you need water. The second thing is what Ben talked about, which is, you know, security, safety. But the third thing is belonging. It's such an important need for human beings across all cultures and all people. And when people do not feel like they belong, there's hefty consequences to that. And that could be internal or externalizing behaviors, whether that's depression, whether that's suicide, whether that's substance abuse. It has hefty consequences to people all over. So I want to start with sense of belonging. And here's the thing that I think is really interesting about sense of belonging that we need to think about when we're talking about Black youth is the question of, do they feel like they belong to American society, one, and does American society feel like they belong to Black children? Because belonging is bidirectional. You can't feel like you belong to something if that thing doesn't feel like you belong.
Okay.
It's a bidirectional process. So when we think through the historical and contemporary times and looking at for Black adolescents, Black children, Black people in general, let's start with slavery. During slavery, there was, you do not belong. During Jim Crow times, it was obvious, you do not belong. Through mass incarceration that is current, that Michelle Alexander talks about in her book, The New Jim Crow, that's related to the war on drugs, clearly it is, you do not belong in society so much that we're going to imprison you more than, you know, the United States, you know, the United States, their prison population, I think, is 25% of the world's prison, right? Mm-hmm. And it's mainly of Black and brown people, right? So that says you do not belong. Even when we look at the Black Lives Matter, which has been pushed forward by many young people, to say Black Lives Matter, that means that for some reason, as we know, they're saying that because history and things that's happening in the media and the news is saying that it does not matter. And we're asserting that our lives matter because somewhere there's a sense of you do not belong.
Okay. So even though for them to have to say or feel that they need to say Black Lives Matter, it's because that's a response to the fact that they feel they don't matter or that someone's trying to make them
absolutely
feel that way.
Okay. Absolutely. And we see that through all of the police violence, through the killing of Black boys and adolescents, right? And so we see these things all over the news over the past few years, particularly with Trayvon Martin, right? And we're also seeing it with girls as well, Black girls as well. So we had the example of the police officer that held the 15, I think she was 14 or 15-year-old girl down, you know, and pushed her down into the ground. We're seeing these images and examples over and over and over. And these are things that people think is new, but as you said, obviously they've been happening for 400 years.
Right, and that's why I backpedaled, because mm-hmm. I said in my mind it's become a bigger deal in the news recently, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. been a big deal the whole time. It just it wasn't quite
social media.
Right.
Social Facebook.
Okay.
Because what happened in South Carolina, what happens in New York, what happens in
Ferguson.
Chicago,
mm-hmm.
people now can find out in a second what's
happening.
Oh, because
Ferguson, Missouri wouldn't have been on anybody's radar.
Absolutely not. But now that people can put it on social media and talk about it, then now everyone, it's in everyone's collective conscious. So this sense of belonging is playing over and over. And so the question becomes, what does it mean when I feel like I don't belong?
Okay.
What impact does that have to your overall health and well-being, particularly when we know that Maslow talks about the importance of this? What does that mean to Black children when they see everything that's on the news media, when they experience the microaggressions that they experience? What does that say to their sense of, do I belong? Of course, that's going to impact anybody's well-being.
So if you do feel that you don't belong, mm-hmm. or you feel like some sort of a second class citizen, mm-hmm. or worse, mm-hmm. how does that affect then? You could have a great sense of self-worth in your own community.
Absolutely.
But how does it affect your sense of self-worth as you progress through your life?
Absolutely. It can do it in many ways. What we see, for instance, right now is across the United States, there's been studies looking at the impact of microaggressions on Black students, right? So we see that a lot of Black students talk about microaggressions that they have across many universities in the United States, where they feel as if they have to prove themselves. They feel like they have to prove themselves to be in that program. They feel like they have to prove themselves in the classroom. And these are 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, and even for, younger kids, they feel like they have to prove themselves. So that's one way that we can see belonging might impact.
I am going to interrupt and ask if you could define microaggressions.
Yeah, absolutely. So a microaggression is a comment, remark, behavioral response to someone that is rooted within some sort of prejudice that can be seen as covert. Right. So it would look something like, oh, wow, you are so articulate. Something like that.
Because then they always think the parentheses, what would be written in the parentheses.
Right. As okay. opposed to what else would I be?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that would be an example of a microaggression.
All right. Now, can I ask a sub-question
Absolutely.
On this? Thank you. Can some of this be misinterpreted, where that professor or teacher could have said the exact same thing to a student of any color because of how well they did articulate their thesis or their mm-hmm. their point?
Mm-hmm.
Like that was, you really did mm-hmm. that very well. Mm-hmm. That was incredibly articulate.
Mm-hmm.
That could,
mm-hmm.
but because of the background,
mm-hmm.
it's assumed to be microaggression.
Mm-hmm. So the best way that I can respond to that would be, I think because of the history of racism and microaggressions in this country, of course, there could be moments where it's misinterpreted. But here's the thing. There is an undue burden on African-American youth where they even have to question, am I misinterpreting this? So that takes up brain space, that takes up anxiety, right, to have to deal. Was it this? Was it not this? So that in itself is an undue burden.
Okay. All right. Continue then. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you
mm-hmm.
for
Absolutely.
For
Absolutely. So and vain with looking at sense of belonging, there's also another area that I want to speak about, which is historical trauma and the impact that that racism and historical trauma plays on youth, children, Black families, Black men and women. And so let me define it. So historical trauma is when a group of people, a collective group, has experienced some sort of psychological or physical injury or wound, and or some sort of trauma, and it impacts them in that lifetime, and it also impacts their generations to come.
All right. We just learned about this. This was just proven in again mm-hmm. with survivors of the Holocaust.
Absolutely.
And that it is in their, it's embedded in their DNA.
And epigenetics. Absolutely. So, and which is really interesting because we know that, you know, schizophrenia is genetic. We know that depression can be genetic. So to understand how trauma can be genetic, that something that happened to a group of people can pass down genetically, you know, in their DNA, that's really quite powerful. And I'm glad that you gave the example of people who survived the Holocaust, because for historical trauma, we have Holocaust survivors, we have, you know, the genocide of Native Americans in our country, we have the Aboriginal people of Australia, but we also have, for African Americans, we have slavery and mm-hmm. Jim Crow, right? And what's interesting about historical trauma and the impact it plays on our country is that according to Bishop Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela, they say we don't want to do what the United States have done with regard to historical trauma of African-American people, which is national amnesia. Therefore, meaning doing nothing. So by the ending of laws, doing nothing to actually aid in the healing process. So then the question then becomes, what happens when there is no healing? So we all can recognize that there was historical trauma, but, you know, there was nothing to say nationally, what do we do to make sure that we're going to heal the impact of that particular trauma, right? So we know in South Africa, Nelson Mandela and all his wisdom did the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which led itself to validation and forgiveness in some ways. I mean, there's some critiques of it. You know, I don't want to say that it was perfect, but it was definitely a step in the right direction over national amnesia. Okay, so then we're left with what happens when there's no healing that's done, right? Mm-hmm. And we see historical trauma represent itself in many different ways, right? So one way is beyond epigenetics, for African Americans, historical trauma literally runs through our bloodline. Okay. And what I mean by that is many African Americans right now are getting genetic tests to see what their DNA is, how much African, how much European, how much Native American. And what many African Americans, and, you know, I'm talking to my kids about this, and they see, wow, you're 18% European. How did that European blood get into your veins? You know, the average African American's Y DNA, which is their all father's line, research shows that 33% of African Americans are descended from a white male. 95% of African Americans are descended from a black woman. What does it mean that African Americans, in the 400 and so years of being in this country, one third of us are descended of white men? And we don't have these conversations. So what does it mean in your blood when you are slave and slaver? And talk about the healing. But then to bring it directly to children, we can then talk about the work that I do, for instance, with Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. And the work that I do there is looking at the impact of sexual abuse on children from all backgrounds. But what we found through the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center is that while sexual abuse occurs at the same frequency in all backgrounds, I want to make that clear, the way to address it is different based on the context and the cultural background. So what we found through Chicago Children's Advocacy Center is that it's difficult to, when going into black communities, particularly in Chicago, it's been very difficult to get into the community and talk about the resources that are available. And so we developed a coalition to figure out why is that? What's going on? And what we found is there is a code of silence around sexual abuse. And there is a, you know, a very strong feeling of not wanting to get resources. But we wanted to understand what was going on with this. And what we found due to historical trauma is the truth of the matter is black women and girls' bodies have been taken advantage of since the shores of this country. And unfortunately, during slavery, it was illegal for a woman to talk about who the father of her child is. So let's go back to that statistic. One third of African Americans are descendant of a white male, including myself. My father did it, including myself. My father's father is a white male. And so during that time in slavery, if you talked about who that white father was, what was the consequence? Your child could be taken from you. So it became adaptive to not talk about it. It became adaptive to keep it in the family. It became adaptive to not say anything. So speed up to 2016. Okay, and then what gets passed down? So with historical trauma, sometimes things that are adaptive in crazy situations and traumatic situations get passed down when maybe now it might not necessarily need to be so. But then we have to look at DCFS, for instance. So while DCFS has, statistically, black people know, and Benton talked about this, they separate black families more than they do any other group of family for the same offense, right? So black families are being separated for the same offense more than any other group. So when you understand that and know that, what's the impact of wanting to call DCFS? Now, right. Chicago Children's Advocacy Center is a resource, and they rarely, we show statistically that they definitely go in and help the family and work with the family. And DCFS doesn't necessarily separate the family, particularly if the person is not in the house. So that's some of the things that we're trying to do in going into the black community and educate on those issues. But we also know the other statistic that also makes that very difficult. So we're trying to work with how do you break the silence and get the resources that you need.
So you're trying to bring the resources in and remove the stigma and remove the fear, but you understand why the fear is there.
Yes.
Because there's factual information to back it up, that the fear that they might be separated, if that's in fact that fear,
right,
is valid.
It's valid. And is it valid? And so we're trying to look at the facts and say, what does it look like for sexual abuse? What does it look like for neglect? What does it look like for trauma? And really trying to work with families and helping them to understand, how to get their needs met. What's the facts? What's the process to make sure that they are getting the psychological resources they need to deal with child sexual abuse? And
that's just one category.
That's just one category
of what we're talking about today, which anywhere from gun violence to sexual abuse to, poverty as a whole. There's all kinds of different trauma that they could be exposed to.
And
this is exhaustive learning about this. I could talk to you for days and days. There's so much.
It is exhausting. Truly.
Okay, because let's just wrap this up with what we've talked about, because to go into another part of this would be an entirely different thing. I'm going to talk to powers that be and see if we can talk about this another time, because this is just, it's so big.
It is.
It's so very big. I have to tell you, Nataka, thank you so very, very much, because it seems so very bleak based on what the facts that you've provided today. It's very, this is going to take a lot of digestion on my part to understand more.
Yes. I mean, it takes a lot of processing for me to constantly think about it all the time. And I'm glad that we're having the chance, and WGN is doing this, because I think it's important. I do want to just say one last thing, though. I do want to add one last thing that I think is really important in recognizing the impact of racism. And I do want to talk about, and we've talked about a little bit over the segment, but really understanding the impact of poverty as a great leveler.
Yeah, please do.
And Heartland Alliance just came out with some research through their Social Impact Research Center, and they look at poverty across Illinois. And they came out with some public health disparities, and I want to read some. So black children in Illinois are nearly four times more likely to live below the poverty line than white children. The Illinois school districts with the most students of color receive 16% less in funding per student than districts serving the fewest students of color. Unemployment rates are far higher for black Illinois workers than whites at every educational level. Illinoisans of color are 2 to 3 times more likely to not have health insurance. And I want to say nationally, this is nationally, the median net worth for a white household is $110,500 versus $6,314 for a black household.
All righty.
So
that's
the national, and
sobering.
It's disturbing. It's sobering, and it's almost, to me, illegal. And if these numbers were reversed, if I was saying the reverse for, you know, the national median net worth of a black household is $110,000 versus $6,000 for a white household.
$6,000?
It would be all over the news. It would be all over the newspaper. They would talk about it at the presidential election. So the very fact that this is even being discussed goes back to that sense of belonging. Because really, at the end of the day, that number says you don't matter. And so once again, what impact does it have? How does it seep into black children's consciousness? And how do they deal with that in their sense of well-being as a risk factor?
Mm-hmm. And well, but again, it comes with, and I mentioned this in our first segment with Benton Johnson, it's that vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the vicious cycle was maybe decades, mm-hmm. because, you know, living in the same neighborhood or having the same community area, or, you know, food deserts,
right?
Any of that. That's
right.
Kind of what I thought, right. Was the vicious cycle. This vicious cycle, based on your information, extends far beyond that.
Absolutely.
So while some of this information, a lot of this information is very heavy and could seem very bleak to many people listening, what are we looking towards? What's the future? What is the positive, the light at the end of the tunnel?
Absolutely. What I can say is, for me, in answering that question, what helps me to think about what the light is at the end of the tunnel is, although we talked about some very bleak things, I also want to say that I've learned a lot from my ancestors, because they decided, they chose to get up every single day and to live. And I really want to speak on that, because that was a decision. They chose to wake up every day and live. They could have laid down, they could have done anything, but they chose to move on. And thank goodness for that, because I'm here. And so to me, that is the resiliency of my history. And this history is that they left that lesson. And that's a lesson for all of us. So with that lesson, I take it seriously. And so you keep moving forward. You keep moving forward. Things are better today than they were 300 years ago. You keep moving forward. Things are better in many different ways. And so I believe it's important to keep being an activist, to keep working on these issues, to keep speaking on them, to not lay down, to get up and keep moving forward.
Nataka, I'm glad that we closed with that message. Thank you for that positive end to this. Please be sure to join us for part 3. We're going to be talking about the criminalization of black children, which will prove to be incredibly powerful as well, I am sure. Hannah Stanley, this is On Social Health and Change. If you could take a moment and hit subscribe, and then we will be back with you with more brought to you by Adler University. Stay tuned.